Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Hello, hockey fans, and welcome once again to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. I'm Mark Warner along with Chris Lisa. We are now going to be affiliated with the inaugural launch of the Hockey Writers podcast page over at thehockeywriters.com. We're talking with J.D. Stiles from Cali Sports News, reporting live from the Stanley Cup Finals. And today we're being joined by the first general manager in Las Vegas franchise history, George McPhee.
With Pat Quinn, you know, I'm likely the finest man I've ever met in my life.
This is the Vegas Hockey Podcast. We're talking with Quinn Malarchuk.
There's something about George McPhee that everybody says is a good pick.
This is the Vegas Hockey Podcast, and we're talking with Dana Lane, play-by-play voice of the MLB Rebel Hockey Team and owner of Dana Lane Sports. Joining us now is Matt Pryor of thehockeywriters.com. He's coming to us from the Dallas Stars training camp. Hello, hockey fans, and welcome once again to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. I'm Mark Warner, along with Chris Lisa, as always. Good to talk to you this Saturday morning where I'm at, but most likely Saturday afternoon or even evening to our European listeners. We always want to give a shout-out to the people across the pond there. It's really fun and exciting to see the listening audience grow and expand into Finland, France, Norway, the UK. It's pretty neat to get all the emails and see our stats grow with you guys across the pond. So special shout out to you guys on this Saturday morning. Chris, good day to you, sir. How are things back east in Long Island?
Yeah, all the snow is gone. No shoveling this week. So
okay.
We almost hit 60 degrees the other day. So go figure. But ready to talk some hockey.
Yeah, well, if you were at 60, you were warmer than us here in Las Vegas, because we've been hovering in the 40s and no rain today, but the last, say, 48 hours, we've been having just constant rain. And then a few days before that, 50 to 60 mile an hour winds. They picked up again last night. Yeah, in fact, I had a letter on my garage door. Some kid had lost his drone, and they were canvassing the neighborhood. Well, I found it in my front yard yesterday. I guess it blew off my roof. So I got a phone call this afternoon to bake. Hopefully I'll be returning some kid's Christmas present to him, little drone toy. But so yeah, after your snow, it's been a little bit nicer here than back east. Go figure, huh?
Absolutely.
Well, I guess news of the week, you're writing for Eyes on Isles, the fan-sided radio or fan-sided sports network, as Islanders columnist there. So I guess the news you wanted to get to first and foremost as we break the ice here is that John Tavares came out this week reiterating his desire and intention to stay in New York and continue playing for the Islanders after his contract expires next year. You being much closer to the action back there than me, first of all, what prompted that? It seems like he's still over, you know, a year and a half removed from being a free agent, and secondly, that had to have been received well in Islanders Nation, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, over the summer, he appeared on Sportsnet Toronto, and they try to stir the pot in a friendly way, if you will, being that he's a Toronto kid, and maybe that he could be a Leaf after coming back home after his contract ends. But he squashed it then, basically saying, you know, I want to spend my whole career with the Islanders, so on and so forth. Then, obviously, the Islanders have had a very difficult, to say the least. So the speculation ramped up again, saying, well, you know, maybe John's going to, you know, come to the thought of, you know, maybe the Islanders aren't going to be able to take the next step. Maybe I should look to leave. Even though about a month, a little over a month ago, again, on the big sports station out here at WFAN, he said the same thing, that this is where he wants to be. So I guess this week, the lead writer, the foremost Islander writer out here, Arthur Staple from New York Newsday. I guess the topic came up, and then he just pretty much put down the mandate and saying, look, this is where I wanted to be. I've said from day one, which is true. This is really, these rumors have gone on since the Islanders won the lottery in 2009. So this is where I want to be. My heart's with this organization. I'm dedicated to this organization. You know, pretty much end of story. And then he used that platform also to say that he has not played up to snuff, that, you know, a lot of these, to paraphrase, a lot of these losses could have been wins, because he's not having his best season either. You know, really, hardly anybody on the team is, to be quite frank, other than I can probably say a couple of guys, such a, one of them ironically being Thomas Greiss. But so, yeah, that was definitely well received here. And just to put a bow on it, at the town hall ownership did at the Barclays Center last summer with all its season ticket holders, one of the new owners, Jonathan Ledecky, said, you know, you can quote me on this, you know, John Tavares is not getting to free agency. So come July 1st, the Islanders can, if they want to, that's the earliest they can sign him per the new CBA. So I would expect this summer, just like with Jamie Benn, we saw this past summer with Jamie Benn with Dallas, that you'll see him lock up to probably an 8-year max extension.
Well, I guess with the season going the way that it's going on in Brooklyn, I guess writers will be writers, and speculation will start to arise if you see a window of opportunity, maybe thinking that the star might go. And the, you know, you got to admit, even though Islanders Nation is near and dear to your heart, seeing Tavares, just the thought of him playing with Marner and Nylander and Matthews and the kids coming up in Toronto, that would be an exciting hockey club. So at the very least, that kind of an article is going to record some clicks and get some people excited about that possibility. That would be kind of an interesting dynamic. Is the one piece that maybe Toronto is missing is that veteran presence, if you will, to go forward. But still, Toronto having a good season, hanging around in the ninth spot in the East. But certainly an exciting topic, if you will, for the pundits to kick around about anyway.
Yeah, and just to make like a last point on it, just like Steven Stamkos decided to stay in Tampa.
Sure.
I think he realized, you know, he's another Toronto kid, and this is nothing against Toronto, but I think he realized, you know what, I'm really happy where I'm at, not just on the ice, but off the ice. And, you know, a lot of guys in sports, the ones that get it, if you will, say, you know, you can't put a price on that. So I think that's where Tavares is at. He'll also understand that the microscope's a lot bigger in other markets, not that he's afraid of it. But, you know, he's a smart guy, not just on the ice, but again, off the ice. So, again, until he signs the contract, I guess that speculation will go on to a degree. But, yeah, he kind of really put out the statement. It was a big story out here this week. But I guess the other
thing is agree?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, just would you agree that the Stamkos didn't do nearly as good a job at squashing the Stamkos to rumors that Tavares has done just right now? Stamkos himself played into the whole we'll see what happens kind of a dialogue instead of the I'm here dialogue. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, because like I said, I mean, Tavares has been loud and clear on numerous occasions. And Stamkos and Lightning the previous summer didn't even talk. So, yeah, well, it was kind of strange how that all played out, quite honest. But,
Yeah.
Based on, you know, what everyone was saying and the talk or the lack of talk and all that jazz. So no doubt about it. So that was, but you know, we love rumors and, you know, and speculation,
right,
and all that, so I can understand that. I would argue if I was a Leafs fan, and not that this is ever going to happen, but if I could pick one player in the league to put on the Leafs, it wouldn't be John Tavares, it would be Drew Doughty, because that's the kind of guy that they need.
Easy.
On that team.
Easy.
Yes.
I think his
well,
he's going to be...
he's not going anywhere.
No, easy with that. That's... Whew, don't go there.
I'm not trying to start a rumor. I'm saying that's the kind of player they need more than anything. But he isn't going anywhere. So real quick, so why don't we these divisions are getting kind of crazy. I think no more so than you hinted at it than the Atlantic. I mean, going into the action today, the Bruins were in second place, although they played many more games than everyone else in the division with 49 points. And Detroit was in eighth place, although they have three games in hand on the Bruins at 40 points. So basically it's a total, 52 pickup situation in the Atlantic between the second and eighth spot.
Well, looking at it, Montreal's 9 points clear of Boston at the beginning of play today. Boston was holding a 3-2 lead at the time we went on the air here. I was keeping an eye on that game because our guest today, Jillian Fisher, has a little bit of both teams near and dear to her heart with the Boston-Philly matchup there. And so there's 9 points between Montreal and Boston and 9 points between Boston and the last place Detroit Red Wings. So when we talked with Colton Prejo there earlier on about the Ottawa Senators, I thought with the Desjardins and Galchenyuk injuries, Ottawa had a chance to close that 7-point gap and make really a run towards the division, but they have cooled off. Boston has been playing pretty consistent hockey and has passed Ottawa there for second in the Atlantic. But impressed with Toronto. Go ahead.
So keep in mind, going into today, Ottawa is only 1 point behind Boston, but has five
right.
games in hand. So that's the thing.
That's important. Yeah, that's important.
Yeah, but like you said, Toronto, same thing. Toronto's 3 points behind Boston, but with their win over the Rangers last night at the Garden, again, same thing. They have five games in hand on Boston as well. So that division, and I'm just shocked. I have been waiting all year for Tampa Bay to get going. I know they're without Stamkos, and they've had some other injuries as well. So that team is just,
Bishop especially.
Yeah, but they have Vasilevskiy. I mean, that team is just too good and too deep and too well coached to be. And quite frankly, they're not in the Metro. They're in the Atlantic, to boot. I am puzzled of what's going on there. I mean, it sounds crazy to think that there's a possibility that they could miss the playoffs. But we're 44 games in, and they're 20-20-4 after last night's loss. So this division is, I think, going to be really frantic in terms of who gets the two automatic spots after Montreal. And then, who else is going to be fighting for that second wild card along with the Flyers?
Well, right now, looking at the wild card in both conferences, five teams are making it in out of one division. So when you look right now, Metropolitan Philly holding that last wild card spot, 50 points. They're 3 points clear of Carolina at 47. So even if the unprecedented Carolina Hurricanes were to jump up in the race, that second wild card spot in the East would still be coming out of the Metropolitan Division.
And Carolina's got two games in hand on Philly.
Right. So, I mean, that very unexpected for me. I thought Carolina was selling the farm, getting ready to relocate the franchise when they moved Eric Staal and so on and so forth. But somehow they've been able to – Cam Ward with a little bit of a rebirth this season. Somehow Carolina's been able to stick around and stay in that race. When you look over at the West, Pacific Division's doing the same thing, although maybe not at a high level as the Metropolitan Division. But all five playoff teams right now are coming out of the Pacific Division. So unless – and granted, when you look at the Western Conference as a whole, Nashville and Vancouver, surprisingly, again, only one back of LA there, eighth spot with, Dallas could always catch fire if they could just stabilize their goaltending and get their defense in order. Only two back at 44 points with Winnipeg at four. I'd say Arizona and Colorado are foregone conclusions. But again, a tight race there in the back end of the Western Conference, but still both playoff teams coming out of the Pacific. Is Nash, is it too early. It's definitely too early to write off Nashville and Dallas, right? I had Nashville winning that division, which now 14 points behind Chicago. That doesn't look like it's going to happen. But I think Nashville, yeah, bajillion about the environment in Nashville here that was there. But I think Nashville and Dallas both still have it in them to make a run.
Yeah, Nashville and Dallas also, Nashville's 2 points behind St. Louis in the third automatic central. Dallas is only three. So, I mean, St. Louis has been a little bit better than those teams. But, you know, they've kind of over the last number of games haven't played great themselves. So they're only five games over 500 to be. And for St. Louis, again, with a team that deep, that's a bit surprising. They've been a very bad road team. They've been excellent at home and bad on the road. Nashville is very similar, so as well as Dallas. So all those teams have that in common. So, you know, it looks like it's going to be a battle between the Hawks and Minnesota for the division. Again, games in hand is an important point here. Chicago is in first place by 2 points, but Minnesota has five games in hand. So, you know, you got to love the math and that and that equation. And Minnesota just stumped the Canadiens the other night at home. I think a 7-1 win. So, you know, it looks like to me that you got Chicago, Minnesota fighting for the Central. I know Edmonton's close, but I think at the end of the come the last month, it's going to be a battle between San Jose and Anaheim for the Pacific. And then you're going to have these other battles going on for that last spot in each division and really a potpourri, if you will, for those two wild card spots out west.
Well, Dana Lane is ready to join us now. Maybe we can get a little bit of insight on what where the sports book think these division races are going to go. Dana, are you there, buddy?
I am. How are you?
I'm good, sir. I'm good. Let's kick it off. The Rebels back in action yesterday at the Mile High Showcase in Denver, beginning their second four game and 4 day stretch of the season with a resounding 5-3 win. But what I wasn't able to watch the game. I'm getting a lot of feedback. Dana, are you beeping away there?
No, well, I'm manipulating traffic in the middle of Los Angeles Uh-oh. Right now. So I set Uh-oh. Up the I had to take my seatbelt off for a second, but I got it back on, so we'll see if it gets better. If Uh-oh. Not, I can take Uh-oh. My headsets out and can you hear me or no?
Yeah, you sound much better now. I heard what I heard was the seatbelt coming and going.
Yeah.
What are you doing in LA?
Sorry about that. Well, Blues Ducks tomorrow night, so I'll be at the Honda Center for that game, and then today we're just about ready to get into Universal, so we're going to do that today.
Okay, got the fam with you, taking the kids to the amusement parks.
I leave them home. I'm just taking the wife.
Okay. Well, anyway, I don't
much fun.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw the Rebel game yesterday, but I was following it on Twitter, and 9 first period minor penalties against UNLV, and then UNLV's Twitter feed at
right.
UNLV Rebel Hockey disintegrated into nothing more than a repeated just penalty after penalty after penalty after penalty. Did you get a chance to see that game, and was it overactive refereeing, or was there just chippiness and that kind of a hockey game?
No, I didn't get a chance to see that. Unfortunately, I was traveling, and in order to see it, you had to pay Northern California or Colorado a fee to actually watch the game. So, I didn't do that, but, I can tell you this, UNLV has a propensity sometimes of causing a few more penalties than they probably should, but that's kind of what they are and who they are. And I'll get more details on, you know, the type of penalties and whether or not they were warranted or not, but they're an extremely physical team and they're scrappy and, you know, sometimes they do cross the line a little bit, but, you know, I don't mind that as much because I know this team is kind of a team that wears you down. And I think part of wearing the opponent down maybe sometimes is, you know, maybe a few penalties here and there. But I know by the time that the third period rolls around, there was no doubt in my mind, even though that game was close, there was no doubt in my mind that UNLV was going to be victorious just by the type of game that I could tell was going on via the internet.
Yeah, same with me. But even with that kind of a play, that's I got to look at the referees a little bit too. That's, I mean, nine just to them in the first period, and there were a few calls that went the other way as well. And then for the rest of the game, it's just it's got to be line destroying for a coach to have to go in and out of the penalty kill and the power play that many times. So coming out of that with a 5-3 win, I think fortunate to kick off the showcase there in Denver and move to 21-3 here on the season. What's up next for them today? I know they're doing the four games in 4 days. Who do they got today?
Well, things have changed a little bit with the UNLV schedule. And of course, next week their next home game has also changed as well. And sometimes during the course of the year, you take some teams out of your schedule just because that they're not helping your strength of schedule. And that's what that's happened a couple times for UNLV. But they'll actually play three games in 3 days, and they'll play Boise, I believe, today, and then Metro State to end it. But that game, and all these teams are in the rankings, in the top 15 at least, albeit it's very difficult to understand how the ACHA actually does their rankings, judged by some of the teams that are not even 500, but they're in the top 15. And there's so much emphasis on strength of schedule. You have a Williston State team that, you know, it's not even a West Coast team and somehow in this region. And because of the strength of two early games against Minot State, their Division One team, they've kind of rode that the rest of the season. So it's as long as we stay in that top two, they'll be fine. They'll get that automatic berth to the to Columbus to play for the title. But it's very difficult at sometimes to figure out how the ACHA actually does their ranking.
Yeah, by reaching into a hat. Go ahead, Chris.
Yes. Hey, Danny, it's Chris. Good to have
you, Chris,
on again. So you and Brian Blessing over at the Vegas Hockey Hotline this week had George McPhee on. Great interview.
Yes.
Give us a couple of interesting tidbits that came out of that interview.
Well, a couple things about that. Number one, we talked about the schedule. And he didn't talk about it in that particular interview, but I do know that, you know, obviously they're able to make their own schedule, one that kind of makes sense. And, you know, he said that he would rather play seven games. I think Bill Foley came out and said eight, so they'll probably have to get together on that main page, but or on the same page. But some teams have come out. You know, Vancouver probably will be involved. Anaheim and LA certainly will be involved, as well as Arizona. I've heard those names. And obviously they're finalizing that. They're about 90% done on that preseason schedule, which is, you know, kind of interesting. This will be probably the preseason schedule we care about the most, because just hearing teams and schedules and, you know, knowing when we're going to play, you know, probably Pacific Division rivals, I think, is pretty exciting. The other thing that came out of that interview was, of course, I think the name Craig Berube, as far as potentially being the head coach of this team, has gotten some steam over the last week to 10 days. And interesting enough that the Golden Knights are looking at Chicago as a place to land their affiliate, AHL affiliate, at least for now. And lo and behold, who's the coach of the Chicago Wolves is Craig Berube. Interesting that George said in the interview that he would prefer that the coach of their American Hockey League team would be an employee of the team. So not sure how that's all going to work out, but I thought that was pretty interesting in conjunction with the fact that Berube's name has, at least at this time, lifted itself to the foreground.
And they're good. And they're, I was reading too, they were preparing the next mock draft. Is that correct?
Yeah, they'll be doing the mock draft here in probably a week or so. It will be their third mock draft. And the one thing that I know about McPhee is he's very, very detailed. And I think by the time this expansion draft rolls around in June, that, you know, they'll know exactly what direction that they're going to go in. And the other interesting tidbit of that article is, or that interview was, you know, we asked him, how many times will you watch NHL teams? You know, how many times will your scouts get a chance to watch every team in the league? And he came out and said, not only will we watch the NHL teams about 30 times each, we'll also watch the AHL teams about 30 times each. So
wow,
this is not going to be a man that's going to leave any stone unturned. When we finally get this expansion draft underway and we get our players, it's definitely going to be because everybody on this all-star scouting staff did their job.
Now, has there been any kind of a timetable yet set? I know that we'll be sharing an affiliate, and it's starting to look more and more like Chicago, like you said. But has there been any kind of a timetable where we can expect one season, three seasons down the road to have a fully stocked AHL affiliate of our own, so to speak? Our own meaning the Golden Knights, of course.
Yeah, I think it's going to take about 3 years. I think the plan to start is to put about 7 to 8 players in Chicago, if that happens to be where it's going to land. And I think you're looking at about 3 seasons where you get a fully stocked minor league system. And, you know, I could certainly understand where McPhee is coming from, because if you're going to put some players there, you want to make sure that the coach there is somebody that's actually going to play your players. And I think in order to ensure that he will become a member of your staff. Now, the interesting part about that is the original story that came out said, hey, look, this is going to be a 2-3 year fix, and then they're going to move on to somewhere else. Well, you know, I mean, it doesn't sound like to me that that's kind of the road they're going on. It sounds to me like Chicago, if that is in fact how McPhee feels, might be some sort of a permanent fix. And of course, the St. Louis Blues have been rumored to be looking to get out of there, possibly back to Missouri, where, you know, Lamar Hunt Jr. emphatically came out and said that that's not true, but we know how that works. And sure. So we might be looking at Chicago as a permanent fix. And I think it's, you know, look, there's a ton of flights going between Vegas and Chicago every day. It's a big market and a first-class facility. As much as I think it would work in Utah, and I've been a big proponent for them, I really wouldn't lose any sleep if Chicago was the choice.
No, I agree with you on Utah as a hockey market. They always do very well. But interesting about the Wolves, though, there's a time in the early to mid 2000s where they were outdrawing the Blackhawks. So you know that they'll be playing to a fan base that is Chicago Wolves fans. Not just spillover minor league hockey fans, if you will. They do have a fan base there, and like I said, they were during the dog days of the Blackhawks before Tavares and Kane. Excuse me. The Wolves actually did outdraw the Blackhawks for 2 or 3 years in a row. So that would be, yeah. And obviously their development staff bringing up Panarin and a few of the other young players that consistently get their shot with the Blackhawks as their roster turns over Stanley Cup after Stanley Cup. They never seem to miss a beat. Once again, on top of that division by comfortable margin. So I can see Chicago working out quite well, actually.
Yeah, and the other thing about Chicago, too, I remember during that period, and I think it was back, you know, when the Wolves and the Las Vegas Thunder played in the IHL together, I think there was a billboard in Chicago that said, come see the Wolves, we win. So that will tell you exactly how they felt about
nice.
The Chicago Wolves versus the Blackhawks, because remember at the time that, you know, the Blackhawks were not even on television, local television there. So, you know, they did a great job of reconnecting with their fans there, but they also, during that period of time, did a great job of disconnecting from their fans as well.
Yeah, for sure. Winning does that, and so does getting Tavares and Kane in consecutive drafts doesn't hurt when you're trying to re-energize the fan base. Chicago. So hey, you're going to the game tomorrow night, Anaheim.
Yep.
You got a pick on that game that we can get out of the Dana Lane sports side of Dana Lane?
Well, it's hard for me to not like where Anaheim is going at this point. I I'm a big fan of teams that don't necessarily feel like that they have to have an hour-long tribute to people coming back to the organization. So that that grabbed my heart there. I don't know where all this tribute and all this stuff has come from, but the Ducks decided not to do it for Boudreaux, and I'm good with that. I like the direction that the Ducks are going. I think they're starting to play that heavy type of game that has made them extremely successful. I think they're played much better defensively. And, you know, although I really like St. Louis a lot, I still, I think there's just something missing there. It's the same way that I feel about Nashville. I think you take Shea Weber out of Nashville, or you take David Backes out of St. Louis, and I think you're not only missing something on the ice, I think you're missing something in the locker room. So certainly Anaheim would be the side that I would favor tomorrow night.
Okay, and with that, Dana, I see Jillian Fisher on hold. I'm going to let you go to your little mini vacation there. Thank you for the free picks for all of our listeners. Appreciate that.
That's not a problem. Hope you have a good weekend, guys.
You too. As always, you guys can find Dana Lane at Dana Lane NHL on Twitter or at Dana Lane Sports for all of his sports information services that he does very well, I might add. And also as the voice of UNLV Rebel Hockey on their home games through their YouTube feed. So again, Dana, thank you very much, sir. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and we will talk to you next week.
I appreciate it. I just wanted to add as well that UNLV did add a home game against BYU next Thursday. That might not have been on your original schedule, but they will be back home next Thursday at the Las Vegas Ice Center against BYU.
Okay, yes, I did see that, and I did want to bring that up, so I'm remiss in doing so. But hopefully if things work out, I'll be able to catch up with you out there at the game. Right now, I was planning to go see that game because I think BYU should be a pretty good challenge for the Rebs there. It might be a good hockey game, not a 10-3 blowout like we're used to with these guys.
Well, we hope that it is 10-3, but I'm sure BYU will come with its best, as it does in every sport every time the UNLV and BYU seem to meet up.
Yes, quite the rivalry there up I-15. Anyway, thank you, sir. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, guys. Have a good weekend. Thank you.
And now we'll be going live with Jillian Fisher. And just 3, 2, 1. Hello, Jillian. Are you there?
Hey, I'm here. How are you guys?
Oh, we're doing good. It's a pleasure to talk to you again.
Oh, thank you. Thank you guys for having me back.
No, it's our pleasure. For those of us that don't know, Jillian Fisher was on the show last year, and we had a really good time talking with her. She is a self-proclaimed sports anthropologist, and what that means is that she studies not only the sport itself, but the cultures and societies that spring up and surround different sporting clubs. And she's been all over the planet, Spanish soccer teams, European soccer teams, as well as a deep love of the NHL and hockey itself. Just fresh off of the Winter Classic. Before we get into that, though, has long time been affiliated with Hockey Buzz and Eklund over there, but now focusing most of her hockey content through FisherJillian.com. So if you guys want to look it up after the show, make sure you go through there. She also contributes for Sports Entertainment Today. Is that right, SET?
Yep, that is correct. Sports and Entertainment Today. It's a little different. It's actually geared a lot towards women and just different things. I was always saying off of the ice, just because there's a lot of coverage of stuff, you know, the game, and you have an analyst and stats, and those things are all great. I love that I can get them so easy, but they've never been my personal strong point. They've never been. I've always enjoyed looking at them, but when it comes to developing them and it's always been a struggle for me. So it's another side of sports is what we focus on.
Yeah, I'm not the big analytics guy myself. But first, let me apologize to you because before we scheduled the show, I failed to consult the NHL schedule this morning with Flyers Bruins caught up in a pretty exciting game I was watching. I remiss in taking you away from that game this morning. So we apologize.
No worries. That's the glory of the internet today, is that I can essentially hit pause and then play from where I started, or I could just go and read through Twitter and kind of get a play-by-play there if I really wanted to. So that is nice. And I can keep the box score up, and it updates pretty accurately.
Yeah, well, last time I checked, it was 3-2. Your Bruins were going into the third period, so I'm not sure if that still
right now. It's
holds
5-3. It's five to three right now. So yes, it's been a crazy game. It seems like.
I am not refreshing. One thing interesting about the Bruins before we get into your recent travels, looking at that game just from a little bit of a numbers standpoint, having the two teams get mm-hmm. together in both teams combining for over 60 shots a game, not your typical Flyers 2-1 matchup with 10 to 12 roughing penalties going back and forth either way. This has been a wide open stretch of hockey, and maybe a tribute to Mr. Julian changing his philosophy a little bit and moving them into one of the top power play and offensive teams in the league that a lot of people haven't recognized yet.
I think that's also just the way you have to play in today's hockey. I think if you want to be successful, you have to adapt to the game. The game is always changing, and that's the way you got to do it, I think, because we see it's a much faster game, so that's one way to combat that. And if you're always in the box, you're always chasing the puck, you know.
Yeah, for sure, especially in the Eastern Conference with Pittsburgh and the Tampa Bays that have been rising over the last couple of seasons, and Coach Cooper's style of play, if you will, where you're trying to get all five men engaged and involved instead of just hanging your two defensemen back at the point and blasting it at the net and trying to bang in a rebound. It is evolving more toward that speed skill game in the East, which is fun to watch. Let me bring in Chris to say hello and kick off the talk about the Winter Classic. Chris, come on in, buddy.
Hey, Julian, great to talk to you again. So the Winter Classic this year was in St. Louis. You were there. Tell us about it. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk by people saying, gee whiz, all these outdoor games, is it losing its luster? And I know you, I believe you went to last year's game in Colorado, so maybe in addition to what it was like in St. Louis, kind of get your take on that.
I
think of a better person's take.
Yeah, honestly, it's funny because I've heard a lot of that, and I've been to quite a few of the outdoor games. I'm going to one in February, the Flyers Penguins. Last year I went to the one in Boston. I did Denver. I did Minnesota. I just did St. Louis. So I've been to quite a few. I've been very, very lucky. I'll acknowledge that. But I personally choose to go to them, and I'm sure, yes, the NHL is doing it in a way to make the most money for themselves. You know, that's kind of, I think, why they cap it at three outdoor games. I think anything more than that just puts too much of a financial burden, and you start to worry, are we going to make enough money off of it? So there's, yes, the NHL might be in some people's minds, you know, kicking a dead horse at a certain point. But I disagree that they lose their charm, they lose that specialness, because every time I've been to one of these, and this is, you know, how many years are we? This is 2008 was the first one, I believe. Might even have been earlier. But, you know, I see and I hear fans see the ice for the first time in their home city where they've never seen a hockey game. And to hear their amazement and their excitement, it hasn't lost its charm. These games are still special, especially for these people who have never seen, you know, Busch Stadium transformed to a hockey arena. And, you know, if you've never been to Busch, I had seen pictures, but, you know, when you see pictures, sometimes it just doesn't do justice when you see it for the first time for yourself. It's perfectly placed so that you see the arch right outside, like out in the outfield. So it's perfectly placed in that point. And for me, it never gets old. I go and I see these arenas and stadiums transformed, and it has yet to get old. The first time you see it, it has this charm, and the energy is just different. I mean, it's outdoors. It's something you don't see every day. Even if you see it three times a year, maybe, but that's not a lot. If you think about it, it's only three times a year. There's 82 hockey games. Only a very, very small percentage gets to play outdoors. I don't think that they're losing their charm at all.
Yeah. I think an important point too is like, this is, even though you might see similar teams in these games, like the Blackhawks and the Penguins, you know, NBC wants the Stars, and they want the big teams. But I believe, you know, this was St. Louis's first outdoor game, the one you went last to Colorado. I believe it was their first outdoor game. So as long as they kind of keep moving it around and have the home team keep changing and, and giving that experience to people. So, you know, who knows? St. Louis may not get another one for the next few years, you know, and then it's fresh.
It'd be really cool also, because at a certain point, you know, you guys know I love Tampa. They're a great market down there. And it's, you know, yes, you can make hockey, outdoor hockey happen at a certain temperature, but Tampa, I think, might be a little bit too warm. I think even for them, it's just, you know, I look down at the weather and it's 75 degrees consistently. And just thinking an outdoor game with the sun's hitting the ice, it'd be really cool to see them start playing them in these, like, historic stadiums or these historic arena, outdoor arenas. Like, I know in Ohio, I know that they said that the Horseshoe, they're not interested in doing it. But if they could start trying to incorporate essentially that kind of aspect too, we were talking, a group of people from St. Louis and I were saying, how fun would it be if the NHL managed to pull off an outdoor game in Sweden? Like, just crazy, crazy concepts that we know would never happen. But it just the idea that people are thinking like that, it shows that they like this. They don't want it to stop. They enjoy it happening, and they want to make sure that it still stays fresh.
And what was your experience like when you real quick, Mark, before I hand you back, hand Julian back to you, is want to ask her about Nashville, because to me this is a very, you know, to me, I remember when Nashville got, you know, entered into the league, and I was just shaking my head, nothing against Nashville, but when I thought of, you know, hockey diehards, I did not think of, you know, Nashville. So what was your experience like? Obviously, you've been in the league for a while now, and I don't know how many times you've been there. What was your experience like going there and seeing a game there, and how have they drawn to Mr. Subban out there?
Oh, well, I mean, it's you know, I don't like using the words non-traditional market, because I just think, you know, if you put a hockey team there and the fans love it, it's now a hockey market. In my mind, it's not even non-traditional anymore. It's hockey can be anywhere. You can make it successful anywhere. But when you think about country and you think about you're at a bar with live country music and you have people when you're, you know, I have bought a pair of cowboy boots. It's not something you normally think of associated with hockey per se. And it's kind of like the soundtrack of hockey. I don't think the soundtrack of hockey is country music. So it wasn't, it's not like, you know, or when I was in Tampa and you're down there, it's 95 degrees. Again, it's that same concept where you don't imagine hockey there, but when you see just how much they love it and the amount of people I talked to who had been there, you know, there's a lot of people I said, oh, how long have you been a fan or a season ticket holder? And so many of them have been season ticket holders or, you know, part of the fan base since they came in 98, was it? 98. And, you know, but the other cool thing about that kind of market is you can come and be a fan 2 years ago and nobody's like, oh, you're a bandwagon fan. So it's kind of this nice balance. You know, I talked to quite a few people also who were, you know, new fans, but they just fell in love with hockey. They felt like that, you know, this sport. And I worry, like, you know, if you're in Philadelphia or Boston, it's kind of just like you're expected that hockey is something that happens there. But in Nashville, it's just a different experience, but they just really love it there. And people, there's Broadway's right outside of the arena, like right there. And I just didn't expect the bartender to ask me about, I had a Predators ugly sweater on, and she just started talking to me about the Preds. And it's just, again, even in Philadelphia, sometimes I don't get that, you know, the people want to talk about football because it's football season and stuff like that. And in Nashville, they love hockey, and they really do. They miss Shea Weber. They really appreciate everything he did for them. But they really do. I did not hear anything bad about PK Subban. The one game, I've been there for two games now. The first game I was there, they seemed to really be embracing him, and they really seemed to love his personality and just his excitement for the game and excitement for life.
No, and I'll agree with you on the phrase non-traditional hockey market, because I've been well exposed to that since Las Vegas started our ticket drive way back when, and certainly nothing is. I'm not sure what the stigma is with that, and as well as the whole bandwagon fan thing. I think hockey somehow generates that more than other sports. We were talking a little earlier with Dana Lane about possibly the Las Vegas team sharing an affiliate with the Chicago Wolves. And not too long ago, the Chicago Wolves were outdrawing the Chicago Blackhawks 2 or 3 years in a row when Chicago was down in the doldrums. But now the Chicago Blackhawks fans on the internet are the first ones to accuse Kings fans of being bandwagon fans or you know what I mean? It's kind of weird that that stigma does come up around hockey more so than other sports. Is that kind of what you noticed as well in your travels?
Oh, 100%. 100%. And I think it's because hockey is, you know, I, as a fan, you feel like your sport doesn't get the coverage it deserves. You know how good it is. You know how much you love it. And you feel like you're a part of a different community. You, like, I was talking to somebody in Nashville and I said, you know, in America, football, just liking football is the norm, but you actively choose to be a hockey fan almost everywhere in the U.S. If you're a hockey fan, it's because you have a different level of passion for the sport. It's not something you're generally casually watching. And I think with that comes this community where they feel a little bit more protective of it. It's like, are you really a fan? Because we get a lot of crap from the media about hockey. And if you're really not a fan, you know, and I think that's where it comes from. But I just, I don't like calling it non-traditional. It's never been something, you know, I just feel like if you love hockey, it's a hockey market. And sometimes it's easier to show up and pay money to go see a game when a team is doing well. You know, if you think about a family of four paying for four tickets, it's like, do you really want to go and see your team be horrible? So I always feel the need to defend those types of fans because I get it. I do. But you look at markets like Edmonton or anywhere in Canada, really, and they have been showing up. So I get it, but hockey just is a different market in general. But you'll never hear a non-traditional football market or a non-traditional baseball market. So it does only ever get applied to hockey.
Right, and shout out to the fans in Buffalo, too, who've been watching some pretty bad hockey for quite a long time and still regularly spark the top 10 in attendance. Shout out to the Buffalo Sabres fans as well. I know they're hugely rabid about their hockey. And, you know, Toronto as well, this year being the exception over the last, you know, decade of bad hockey there in Toronto as well. Their fans, you know, they'll all show up. They might throw their jerseys on the ice, but, you know, they're still going to sell their tickets there. Now you mentioned outdoor hockey temperatures. I will say that Las Vegas back in 1991 put on an outdoor hockey game with the Kings and the Rangers where the game time temperature was 87 degrees and it was actually held in Caesars Palace's parking lot. Me and my wife went to the game and the ice was a little bit chippy. They had to stop and do a little bit of repair work on it, but it held up well enough that the league deemed it safe to play, and they let Wayne Gretzky skate on it. So,
if they let him skate on it.
There you go. That was my barometer. If they're going to let the great one skate on the ice, it's got to be safe enough to play. Oddly enough, two days later, and I want to say it was in Nashville, but I could be mistaken. North Carolina, now that I remember. There was an indoor game that was going to be Kings and Rangers. The indoor ice was deemed unsafe to play, and they did cancel that game.
Oh, my God.
So if they want to do an outdoor game with us, we could certainly do one here in Las Vegas once we build our football stadium that's hopefully going to be announced soon as well.
Well, they did just file the paperwork, right? Oakland Raiders just filed that paperwork, I thought. So.
Yep. We're waiting on 24 votes. 24 votes. That's all we need.
But it's really exciting to see hockey coming to Vegas. I know the one thing is a little bit frustrating for me as somebody who appreciates different fans in different places. I said, it's a shame. People are already hating on Vegas fans for being non-existent. And it's like, what have they done to deserve that? They haven't done anything except they bought the season tickets. So I do get a little frustrated with it, but I get hockey fans they're very passionate, and it's like a community that you've chosen to be a part of. And they just want to make sure if you're a part of it, you're really going to be in it. But I think being more embracing of new markets would be really a step in the correct direction for hockey.
Well, I think the culture around the game kind of bites, you know, cut off your nose to spite your face, where you did mention that protective attitude about the game. But to just instantly come and attack us, for instance, when we haven't even dropped a puck here. All we did was sell 15,000 season seats. And then I'm going to hear from Winnipeg fans that say, yeah, well, we sold ours in 7 minutes. It took you 7 months. Yes, it did. Congratulations. You guys knew you had a team coming. We did not know we had a team coming when we sold our season tickets.
Exactly.
So I think that attitude hurts. And you know, the same people want to grow, you know, quote, grow the game. Do you know your hockey, you know, but at the same time, growing the game and insulting the new fan base seems to be oxymoronic to it.
Counterintuitive.
Sure. What I wanted to ask you is, have you seen, and I myself have seen it, I guess the longer I do this, the more people realize that actually I do know just a tiny bit about hockey, watching it since 1980. And that at least there's why I've been told, well, at least we know there's one hockey fan who knows their stuff in Vegas. Well, there's a couple more than just me. How have you noticed the tenor surrounding that softening a little bit as more and more people kind of get excited about actually Vegas being a hockey market coming up here? Now we're in the same calendar year.
Depends on the market. I feel like, I think markets like Tampa, markets like Nashville and St. Louis, I think are definitely softened up a little bit. Or even like I was in New Jersey for part of the road trip to the Winter Classic, and they were really pumped. You know, a lot of the people I talked to were just excited to see another team in the league, another place to go to. You know, they were excited to travel there. I'm sure Vegas fans already hate that. But, you know, it's exciting to see another team coming. It's, you know, you want success. For them, a lot of the people I've talked to, they're hoping for success. They're hoping to see it. You know, most people that I've talked to aren't hoping for failure, but it depends. Again, the attitude I get depends on where I've been. And most markets seem to be pretty open to it. But again, I think if you were to go talk to some Canadian markets, they're just, you know, they feel, I think, the most protective of it, especially in America. So I think, you know, I haven't talked to too many like Maple Leaf fans or anything like that, but I have a feeling that they might be a little bit more harsh, but it just seems like they really want success for it. They do. They're not hoping for failure. So, which is a little bit different than what I was first hearing about it. So
I think that's I've noticed that as well. And it did take, you know, 5 months or so, 6 months to announce the team name coming out of the announcement that we were granted a franchise. And one of the greatest things that I've heard before the Golden Knights name was that we should just name ourselves the Nordiques, because that's where they'll be playing in 5 years. And I thought that was fantastic. Every time someone tweeted me that or emailed me that with a picture of the Las Vegas Nordiques logo superimposed onto a meme, it was actually pretty outstanding. And I've always said that I thought the NHL is better with a team in Quebec City, and that for us to go in with Quebec City would have been a great barometer, if you'll let me use the terms non-traditional in this sense, in that you do have a really rich tradition of hockey in Quebec City, and a city like Las Vegas, new to the sport, where we would have been able to judge ourselves and place the barometer against that, you know, ticket sales and jersey sales and where we are in the standings. Mm-hmm. Going in as a sister city with Quebec City would have been quite a neat barometer for us. And unfortunately it wasn't able to happen, but I guess there's still that diehard let's hate on Vegas fan. And come October, we're going to start proving everybody wrong. Do you have any plans to come out here to Vegas and check out opening night or come along early in the season?
I mean,
we'd love to see you.
I would love to. I'd love if we could get together somehow and make that happen, because I'd love to be out there for that. I think that's going to be such a fun time. You know, there's going to be all eyes on the NHL are going to be there, and I think it'd be really fun to be a part of that. So if you guys want to plan that, I am all on board for that right now.
We'll definitely, once the final payments are made on the season tickets, we'll see how that goes. I'm in my payment plan now, and it's kind of odd because I'm going to be credentialed media for the team, but I'm also dropping whatever it is, umpteen thousands on a group of season tickets as well. So I'm sure that we'll, as we get closer to the date, we'll be able to make something happen. Mm-hmm. We've been able to do a live show from one of the bars down there around the stadium, because they've done a nice job putting a couple bars, putting a couple clubs right
That's
there,
awesome.
Right around. And there's a really nice plaza for everyone to hang out. And when they did the Frozen Fury, they had a little rink set up for the kids, and they were out there skating and shooting pucks. And when they announced the team name there in Toshiba Plaza, they put the hockey rink in the plaza back up. So I'm sure that'll be a place, excuse me, it'll be a place that's going to, you know, breed more and more hockey fans the more people come around and get into it. So
one thing I really like about I know you had mentioned it would have been great if it could have been with Quebec City, with the Nordiques. I just that it's really great to see Vegas, because I think the biggest theme in the NHL I see right now is the pool between old versus new. You know, whether you're talking about like the analytics guys versus the character player guys, and all of these types of the embracing the new media versus traditional and all these things. And I think in no other sport do you see it as much as you see in hockey. And I think Vegas is a really great addition, because it shows that the new isn't just bad, that the new can be good, and it's different. It's definitely going to be different, but that doesn't mean it's bad. Different is not always bad. And I think that's a great way to kind of move the NHL towards some of that, because again, the old and the hockey really likes its tradition, and that's great. There's a reason the tradition is there, but I think you have to start incorporating new tradition for new generation of fans. That's important, because I think you don't, you know, if you live on the tradition of all the old, you're not letting any new tradition come in for fans who are, you know, my age and younger, who it never got to see or witness any of these great things that everybody talks about. And it's like, yeah, but wouldn't it have been cool if I get to see it too? That'd be fun. So I think
for sure,
Vegas coming in would be good for that.
Well, and
go ahead, Mark.
No better example of that than Austin Matthews to Toronto, being a Scottsdale-born kid, and freely saying that the only reason he chose hockey over baseball was because his parents took him to the Phoenix Coyotes as a young kid, and he fell in love with the game. So to have that new market generate a number one overall pick who just came in and obviously lit the league on fire, and he's maybe a step below McDavid, but he's opening night 4-goal game, and he never really looked back from that. Now he's in his first All-Star game. So that's a new dichotomy of the new joining the old and being embraced by a traditional fan. And I'm still waiting for his nickname to be the Arizona Kid. He's a gunslinger, and I want to get that out there right now. Hashtag Arizona Kid. I think that would dress him up in cowboy hats and six shooters with Nylander and Marner, and just let him go. I'm all for that. It's like you say, embracing the new. I want to bring Chris in. He's got one last question before we let you go, Chris.
Yeah.
Hey, Jillian. So you know that you're a diehard Flyers fan. So what can you tell us about your team this year? And, you know, Ron Hextall's kind of in a good pickle, I guess. He has a competitive team. He has more coming in the pipeline. How aggressive will he be to try to, you know, make a short-term fix, if that to make the playoffs, or is that not on the table for him?
I don't think that's ever been his goal. I think his goal is always to develop. You know, it's one of the things I think that fans have been patient with for a while. They're trusting the process, because for so long it was hurry up and patchwork everything, and then that kind of imploded in our faces. And so I think he, honestly, if you take Columbus out of this picture right now, to me, the Flyers would be exactly where I expected them to be, right on the bubble of the playoffs, maybe getting in there. But if not, you have such a young core that, you know, even the players who aren't in the NHL right now, they're NHL talent for the most part. And that's exciting. That means people are getting experience. A lot of fans I know that I've talked to feel like this team is close to being a couple years away from really contending. you know, and the good thing is that they have not only do you have somebody like Provorov, who has is an exciting piece. He's showing that he is an NHL player. He has the potential to be an NHL star. You have so many pieces developing right now. You know, you have like Sanheim. You have Morin, Samuel Morin. You have all these players that there's so many developing right now. They're not all going to get to play in Philadelphia. He has some trading pieces there too. I don't think he's going to use those right now. I think holding on to maybe some of that until maybe next season or the seasons where they're really contending, that's where I expect him to start making some of those moves to kind of fix, to get a good playoff run. But right now I think it's, let's just follow the process.
Yeah, well, another player, another player we highlighted in one of our draft shows, Konechny has come up and shown that he's going to be a good player for a long time for the Flyers as well.
Yes, it is an exciting time. You know, I was thinking of comparing the two Bruins and the Flyers, and I think for me, the Flyers, I'm biased because I am a fan, but I'm excited for the future there. Whereas for the Bruins, the future is a little less clear because their core is really veteran, which means what happens in 2 years when are they still going to be where they are right now? Are they going to be in the NHL and that kind of stuff? So their core over there is a little bit more on the veteran side where you're like, okay, we have to try to make a move, I guess. Do we may have to make a move? We're competing well. You know, there's a lot more, I think, confusion there in the sense that, like, they're good enough to get to the playoffs, but can they make a run to the cup kind of thing? Whereas the Flyers, I don't think they're there. They're not making a run for the cup right now. But in a couple of years, I'm hopeful that they can at least try to be a contender should all the pieces continue to fall in place.
Well, the Bruins will have Charlie McAvoy in a couple of years. It's something everyone should keep an eye on for.
Excuse me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Long Island's own.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Really impressed at the World Juniors with Mr. McAvoy there. Being the Flyers fan, I want to know which side of the coin you're on before we let you go. Did the Flyers win the Mike Richards trade or did the Kings? I gotta know.
I mean, when you see the Kings have how many cups and the Flyers have how many cups,
that's kind of where I'm at with
Flyers,
it.
Yeah, I mean, again, I liked both. When you think of Richards, he was a good – people liked him in Philly. He was the hard worker type of player. People were sad to see him go, but after they got swept by the Bruins that year, you had a feeling something was coming. You didn't know how big it was going to be. And I think what happened – the fans were kind of upset because it was like you blew up the core of your team. And what do we do now? There wasn't like right now, if you blew up the core, you'd be like, why are you doing that? We have all this young talent developing. But I would have to say that the Kings kind of made off on that one. But I mean, we do have, was Simmons, was he a part of the Jeff Carter trade?
No, he was on the Richards trades. Carter we got from Columbus and Braden Schenn came in that deal too.
Yeah. So, I mean, if I was to look at it, whatever seasons they won the Stanley Cup, I mean, I was happy to see, you know, and my past Flyers winning cups that I loved. It was really exciting. But looking at it now, it's like, okay, I'm okay with the trade. But I was thinking in the short term, what you're looking at right now, I think the Kings made off because they won some cups, which is the ultimate goal, right?
Yep, and Simmons did turn into the player, 30-goal scorer, grit, stand-up-for-your-teammate kind of guy who does fit in with Philly real well. Schenn kind of underperformed his number 4 overall draft pick, Simmons definitely turned into the player that I thought he would be and was the one piece in that deal that I did not want to see go the other way, but as a Kings fan, I'm obviously on the side that and you know what? However it ended in LA, that's it is what it is. But you go back to the 2012 and the 2014 season, they got cups. Yes. Philly's still building,
yes.
So that's where I'm at with that.
And again, I mean, I liked both players. I think in Philly it has worked out. In the sense that Simmons did turn out to, you know, he's an all-star player. He's going to the all-star game. But you know, once we get those cups is when I'll be happy.
Well, there's going to be quite a, you know, the just the whole there's a youth movement going on in the NHL where these over-the-top, just highly talented kids are coming in at 18 years old, and it seems like almost year after year after year that there's 18, 19-year-old kids coming in that it's going to change the league. And I think it's an exciting time for Las Vegas going into this year's amateur draft and the expansion draft and being able to pull in that fresh group of young talent that it's going to be, it's going to be super hard for a team that doesn't already have maybe some of those key pieces in place like Philly in their farm system and are hanging around that middle of the pack. Will I make the playoffs? Okay. If so, it's going to be a first round exit. Or do I just miss the playoffs and pick 14th overall? Like Vancouver's been stuck, and it's going to be really hard to change direction of franchises coming in the next few years unless you are in that top five draft positions and getting players like a Provorov and a Konechny and over and over again. So I think Philly's going to be right there in 2 to 3 years in the East with Toronto and the Buffaloes and the up and coming young teams that they have there.
It'll be interesting for sure. I think we're already seeing the impact of like that young talent by all the like streaks you're seeing, people going on these crazy win streaks. And I always joke 100%. Because there's so many young players that they're, you know, they have this moment, this burst of energy, and they're still learning. So then they, you know, I know that's probably not directly correlated, but I think it has an impact because this season more than ever, I'm seeing these crazy long win streaks, like a 10 game. I mean, Columbus had their win streak. The Flyers had a 10 game win streak. So there's all
Minnesota.
These going around. And I do, Minnesota, these, all these teams. And, you know, I do think the Capitals are on 1-2, I think right now, a 10 game or 8 game win streak.
Yeah, they're on fire.
So there's all of these, all these crazy win streaks. And I joke that I think it's because there's so much of this young talent in the league where they're still learning their ways and still figuring, you know, getting over those hurdles. And I think that has an impact on these big bursts of energy these teams are having. So it's an exciting time. The NHL is a fun sport. I don't get how people don't, you know, it's not in the mainstream as much as some of the other ones, but I think in Vegas, it's going to be a lot of fun over there. And I'm looking forward to getting there for opening day.
Absolutely. We'll be looking forward to seeing you. Well, I think you're probably only half joking if you, I mean, I'm sure your phrase, they're young enough to not know any better. They don't know that they're supposed to sit in the minor league for 4 to 5 years to learn how to play hockey and then come in and play fourth line minutes and sit in the press box until they're 24. Like the Detroit Red Wings did for so many years to build their cup championship.
Yep.
You didn't have a chance of seeing the ice until you were probably 6 years in the organization, no matter how good you were. And there is that young enough not to know better mentality where they're still, you know, 18 years old, you're still cocky and you think you know everything. And I think that probably plays a lot into the win streaks and the attitude around the NHL now that it is turning into that young game. And the newer coaches, I think they're more apt to continue giving those kids ice time, even if they do a misadvised pinch up the boards and give up a 2-on-1 breakaway the other way. As long as the kids are showing that, okay, they're learning from those mistakes and not repeating them. I know the ghost has been in the coach doghouse because he has been repeating mistakes of that fashion, and maybe his rookie year came too easy to him and now he is learning to know better. But just in a general sense, I think you hit it right on the head. Chris, you got anything else for Jillian today?
No, that's it. And great to have her on again. And Jillian, again, where can people find your stuff?
I do a lot of stuff on Instagram and Twitter, at Fisher Jillian. And then my website, I do a lot of stuff there. It's, again, fisherjillian.com. And if you're ever interested in checking out Set Media, I do a lot of stuff where I focus on the good side of sports. I focus on the impact that sports has on people's lives in the sense of charitable work and, you know, those visits where they go and surprise a kid in the hospital. Those kinds of moments, I think, don't get touched on enough. So I do a lot of that on Set Media, and that's setmagazine.com. And if you guys if you're ever interested, ever want to talk, I'm pretty responsive to comments and tweets. So at Fisher Jillian.
All right. That's great. I did notice on your website today, scrolling through it, that you do have a whole section set aside for the good side of sports, which those are the kind of stories that are pretty awesome that don't get touched on quite enough. So I appreciate that. And hopefully as we get closer to next season, that we'll be able to work something out and we'll get you out here for opening night and get a piece written up there on what's hopefully going to be a successful addition to the National Hockey League. So thanks for joining us today.
Yeah. Thank you guys for having me as always, and I'm looking forward to hockey in Vegas.
All right. We'll talk to you down the road. Thanks again.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. That was Jillian Fisher. FisherJillian.com. Check out all her stuff, and also her Twitter handle is the same, FisherJillian, at FisherJillian. And she does look at sports from that cultural angle, which if you're not an analytics type of guy, and you do go, or a girl, and you do go into the stories and that kind of sports coverage, then Jillian Fisher's right up your alley, eh, Chris?
Absolutely. Great guests as always. Great having her on. She's been to a lot of great markets, arenas, events with the Winter Classic. So definitely check her out, her articles at her website. Check her out on Twitter. Follow, give her a follow. Really, really great stuff. And I'm glad you brought up that Austin Matthews point, because I was just about to as well, in terms of the whole thing of traditional, non-traditional. And, you know, the sport is growing, which is a good thing. You know, nobody wants to go to a market that's not going to work. But sometimes these things are trial and error, hence, you know, markets like Atlanta, things like that. But, you know, sometimes you have to do that to find the Nashvilles and to find what I believe will be a huge hit in Las Vegas and you know, moving forward. So looks like the Bruins are about to win that game over the Flyers. So that's a big game based on where the standings are at. I think they were up 5-3 with about a minute to go. But next week, my friend, we have another great show coming up. We'll have Dana Lane back, of course, with the latest on UNLV and the Golden Knights. And our guest next week will be Alan Zordozinski, who I co-host with, along with Brian Yates over at the NHL on the Ice. And he's going to break down the Capitals for us, who's, you know, all of a sudden knocking on the door of first place in the Metropolitan, 1 point behind Columbus, 8-game winning streak. They really quietly have had a strong year all along. It's just the other teams were playing about a game or two better, and Washington had played a game or two less. So it felt like they were further back than they really were, and now they're on a roll. And for all you Vegas Golden Knights fans, this is a must-listen, because Alan's around our age, Mark, and he's been a lifelong Capitals fan. So there is no better person to talk about to get the skinny on George McPhee than Mr. Alan Z, because he knows the Capitals, like I said, like the back of his hand. So he can give us a great rundown about Mr. George McPhee.
I'll be looking forward to that, definitely. You're doing that pretty regularly now. Why don't you give a little shout out for the other podcasts that you're getting involved with?
Yeah, it's you could find it on Twitter at the NHL on the Ice. It's at NHL ON on _the_ice. The show is live on Mondays from 7 to 9. You can find it on FanSpeak Radio, as well as, I believe, WBLZ.com. And, last week we actually had Brian Blessing on. Gives the rundown.
I heard that one.
Yeah, it was pretty good, if I do say so myself. So I know Alan, I'm not sure who we have on this Monday. I know Alan's pushing to get a pretty strong guest. I hope he does, because the guy has Long Island Ruth, the member of the NHL media. That's all I'll say. And we'll see. So so that's a 2-hour show every Monday from 7 to 9. But like I said, I'm looking forward to having him on our show next week. And we're gonna have after him, Miss Dan Petrie on, who is part of the Hockey Buzz team as well. And then it's just a couple weeks away from our big NHL roundtable show. I'm gonna try to sneak in a show on the Wild. We really haven't had a guest on the Wild, so I've been working on that as well. I want to get that in before the roundtable show. Have someone break down, like, what has changed in the water this year for the Wild.
With Coach Boudreau, probably, and Dubnyk returning to form that he did the second half of of the season two seasons ago when he went on that crazy 29-3 or 29-7 stretch to finish the season. I'd say that those 2 points would be
and
Coach Boudreau. Yeah, hey, Eric Staal, absolutely a little rebirth there for him.
He couldn't, and you know I'm an Islander guy, but and I'm not trying to pick on him. He's been a pro's pro his whole career, but he couldn't look worse. And granted, it was a small sample, but it wasn't like he had a great year with Carolina last year. Any worse with the Rangers last year? And you know the Rangers have players around them. You know they have a good team. But in all capacities, offensively, defensively, he just had a real rough go of it. And and you know, he's in his early 30s now, so you thought, you know, as he lost a step or two, but he's had a real good year for them. So we definitely have to. That's what we're working on before the roundtable show, the 12th. So that'll be Super Bowl weekend. So we'll have to definitely do that show on Saturday. So we're working on trying to find some. We're working on some guests, possible guests for the Wild. So I'm looking forward to it. You know, and as we go along, we'll have more and more news on the Golden Knights. Maybe we can see if we could try to pry away Mr. McPhee one more time as we get closer.
Talking with him. Not too long ago, he said he'd look forward to doing the show many more times. It's just a schedule permitting thing. So we'll get in touch with them over there. And hopefully before the expansion draft and after the trade deadline is kind of what I'm hoping for. I know he's going to be busy at that time, but we'll see what we can do.
Yeah, I'm a little jealous. It's amazing how things would have been if the Islanders would have lost that series to the Panthers. I got a funny feeling he would be the general manager out here now. It's amazing how life works sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes something you look at as a setback ends up being the step forward that you need.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right. So another great show in the books. And if I may say, people can find our shows on SoundCloud. They can find it on iTunes. They can also go to thehockeywriters.com. You know, check out some of our past shows. Last week we had Rob Sawyer on, along with Dana Lane, of course. Rob Sawyer, the hockey writer, is talking about the Edmonton Oilers. You know, recently we've had on, why am I drawing a blank? But we've had a lot of good people on. You know, we've had Philip Iver on. Check out our interview with
Colton Prahill and Mark Scheig came in and broke down Jackets and the Senators for us. I thought that was a really good show because it gave us, you know, two different perspectives on teams that were in similar spots. That's kind of a good show to listen to too, is Colton and Mark Scheig there.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that was a very good show to listen to. And no, I was hanging in there. I give them credit. I mean, obviously, you know, without Craig Anderson and the situation his family's going through, but, you know, again, they've played less games than quite a number than most teams. You know, they're 8 games over 500. They're having a solid season. I know the analytics people will get on them that their goal differential is zero, but I think they and you know they're not getting anything from Bobby Ryan. I mean, what a disaster! I don't know what happened to him, but he's tread downward every year, and this year he's really bottomed out.
Yeah, for sure. Well, anyway, let's go ahead and wrap this up. Wait, one more point.
I was going to say I don't think he's going to be in Las Vegas next year.
That won't be who we'll be choosing, I don't think. That's one thing I wanted to talk with Jillian about is who on the Flyers that she thinks might be left exposed, and I let that one get away from me, so I apologize.
Well, you know what? Real quick, from all the articles I've written on Vegas the last 2-3 months, they probably have one of the weaker exposed lists in the league. I would say, you know, they'd be in that bottom five range. Not as bad as, let's say, someone like Arizona or New Jersey, but not much better. You know, maybe a Matt Reed kind of guy if they wanted to go there. So I wouldn't be surprised if McPhee took someone off their AHL squad or someone who's toggling between their AHL team in terms of from a salary cap standpoint. And so not the greatest in terms of the Flyers.
All right. Well, one thing I did want to get out there, and I noticed it this morning, is that sometimes when I download the Blog Talk Radio portion of the show and filter it through and then upload it up to SoundCloud, the Mark Shy Colton Prahill show, especially I was listening to this morning, there's a lot of audio problems with them as it goes from the Blog Talk Radio to the SoundCloud. So we're going to be working on that. If you guys have noticed that, and if there's any other episodes that have come through that didn't have quality, email the show, MarkWarner@VegasHockeyPodcast, and we're going to try and get those bugs in the system worked out, because I was listening this morning, it really bothered me that did not come through as clear as it should. So other than that, we've had a good show. We'll be looking forward to, you know, having the show next week. We'll tweet out reminder during the week at Vegas Hockey Pod on Twitter, and we'll be looking forward to doing the show next week. For Chris, I'm Mark, and we're gone.